Welcome to Phillies Talk, the independent podcast from FightinPhillies.com, featuring news and views about Phillies baseball. Now, here's Rich Baxter talking Phillies baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Phillies Talk Podcast for July 25th, 2021. Phillies in a sort of a race for a wild card or something better than that. And I'm Rich Baxter, joined with Mr. Matt Beasy. How are you, Matt?
Good afternoon, Rich. How are you?
Very good. Nice and I would call it overcast in the area, in the Philly, South Jersey area here. So we having a nice afternoon, and the Phillies just happened to win one. How about that?
Yeah, just ended on this Sunday afternoon, July 25th. The Phillies edged the Atlanta Braves 2-1. They got a early homer from Gene Segura and a late homer from Ronald Torres. And Aaron Nola trying to get the complete game. He pitched a real gem today, Rich. Went 8 2/3, gave them just what they needed. Allowed only 4 hits, struck out 9, walked nobody. Had it going until 2 outs in the 9th inning. You like to hate to second guess things like this, but might have left him in just a little too long, because at 116 pitches, he gave up a solo home run in the 9th inning to Austin Riley with 2 outs. But Ranger Suarez came on to earn the save. So the Phillies picked up the win 2-1. Great game from Aaron Nola. And Phillies, I believe right now the Mets, the last that I looked, they were trailing, and now they're ahead 5-3. Jeez, last I checked, they were losing. But the Phillies right now, as far as the standings go, they are 5 games tied with Atlanta, 5 games behind the Mets in the loss column in the race for the National League East. And that's really the only race. You mentioned wild card at the top, but they're not going to be in that wild card race. The teams in the NL West are just too far ahead. Right now, I think the second wild card is the Padres at 43, and the Phillies would be 6 games behind them. So, I mean, I guess technically, if you can catch the Mets, you can catch the Padres, but the Padres are sitting 15 games over 500. So I think they're going to be a little tougher to catch than the Mets.
Yeah. Just anything beats a blank. And of course, we heard over the last couple of days that Phillies ownership is apparently given the green light to Dave Dombrowski, the Phillies president and chief operating officer, whatever title that is. He's the guy that's going to sign the checks and bring the ball players over if Phillies can find them. And apparently he got the green light from what I've heard in the media.
That's the word. It seems like the Phillies are going to be willing to spend here at the trade deadline. It's just a question of, what do they actually decide to do? You really got to be on the fence right now with this team. A week ago today, they had come out of the All-Star break. They entered the All-Star break playing really well in the beginning of July, and then they came out of the All-Star break winning 3 out of 4 from the Marlins. That was a week ago today that series ended, and that win pushed them 2 games over 500 for the first time since early May, and it left them just 2 games behind the Mets in the division in the loss column. And then it just fell, and they got into this week, and they just kind of fell flat. They didn't do well at Yankee Stadium, kind of had a chance in both of those games, and kind of just didn't show up at the right times. And here against the Braves, they get a series split, but it's kind of a dissatisfying split. And all it does is leave them tied with Atlanta. They're both clubs are 48 and 49 now, a game below 500. Both teams are 5 games behind the Mets in the loss column. And if this Mets result today, they're leading Toronto 5-3 in the bottom of the 7th. If that holds up, then they're still going to be 5 games behind right now in the loss column. So the Phillies just can't seem to get on enough of a roll. I mean, it looked like I said, a week ago, it looked like we finally had them on that roll, that kind of roll we've been waiting on all year. I think they had won something along the lines of 10 or 11 out of 14 at that point to get to those 2 games over 500. But, this week kind of set them back. So trade deadline's coming up, less than a week away. This is a big week for the team. You know, they have Washington now, a four-game series here at Citizens Bank Park with the Nationals. That'll lead right up to the trade deadline, which comes next weekend. Now, next weekend, they hit the road for seven games against Pittsburgh and Washington. So they'll be in Pittsburgh next weekend at the trade deadline. And what they do with Washington in these four games at home over the next, you know, four nights, that's going to go a long way towards determining, I think, just how much, when you said that ownership gave a green light to spend, possibly to go over the salary cap. I think, you know, how they perform against Washington this week is going to go a long way towards determining if they go over that limit and how much they go over that limit by. Phillies need more than one thing. You know, they need three or four things. And, you know, this was a big week this past week. You know, it was a big week for them to really show management and ownership that they wanted to be in this thing, that they wanted them to go out and spend big to push them over the top. And the club really didn't respond, you know, losing four out of five before today's win. So, you know, hopefully they spin it around again real quick. Maybe they jump out, win a couple of games early against Washington, get everybody excited again. And there are pieces out there that can help this team right now that are available. So we'll see. This is what Dave Dombrowski was brought in for, to make moves at a time like this.
Yeah, and tops on the list may be a closer, a bona fide closer. Craig Kimbrell has been mentioned because of his association with Dave Dombrowski, so we'll have to see if Phillies can land him. But as you said, with the last few minutes that you were speaking, is what kind of team is this? Is this a playoff team? At this time, you have to say probably not. I mean, they're hanging tough, but they can't seem to score a run. The other night, they lost 15-3 last night to the Braves, and they left 0-for-10 runners in scoring position. So they had runners on base, but they just can't score them at times. And they're still in the negative column in the run differential. They're negative 23 right now. That's probably one of the telltale signs of, is this ball club actually the real deal, or are we being sold a bill of goods? Sort of.
Well, they're not the real deal right now, and that's obvious on its face. You know, they're not a winning club. They haven't been a winning club over the last couple of years. They've had stretches where they've been winning, gotten above 500, but they've basically been a 500 ball club for a couple of years now. So no, they're not, you know, they're not a winner right now. There's no reason to really, you know, feel, if they were to stand pat, to feel like that's going to change. But, you know, that's what Dombrowski has to do if they really want to make a run. There's plenty of time. I mean, you have two full months of August and September. That's a lot of baseball, Rich. But you can't get on a consistent winning streak if you're going to keep running Vince Velasquez out there at the back of your rotation. If you are struggling to really find a fifth starter, you know, Matt Moore, they just brought Chase Anderson back this week. He wasn't the answer before, and I don't think he's the answer now. So, you know, if you're going to run your Vince Velasquez, Matt Moore, Chase Anderson combo out there, Spencer Howard on innings limits, if that's going to be your four or five starters, and, you know, Zach Eflin's struggling right now a little bit with between physical problems and performance issues. So, you know, without two more starting pitchers, I don't know what anything else is going to accomplish. They need a center fielder. They certainly could use a center fielder that brings offense to the table while also providing defense. So a two-way center fielder, you know, somebody like they talked about bringing in Chris Bryant. Can he play center field? You're talking about bringing in maybe a Byron Buxton. Can he stay healthy? On top of that, you know, a closer like a Kimbrell and two starters. Can this team bring in, do they have the assets to trade to bring in two starting pitchers and a closer and a top center fielder? I don't know. You know, so this is going to be very interesting to see what Dombrowski is able to pull off, what he tries to pull off. It's going to be interesting, Rich. They're hanging in the race just enough, you know, to make you think if they can somehow bring in the right three or four pieces, then they got a legitimate shot. But they also are kind of treading water enough that you're saying, like, if they only bring in, you know, one guy or two guys, is that going to really be enough? So we'll see.
Yeah, and the Braves are a similar team. Arguably, they have a lot of stars on that team. They are similar to the Phillies. They just can't get over the hump. Phillies went into the All-Star break two games up. We thought that momentum might carry them. Maybe they could be four games over 500 instead of two, but they sputtered again coming out of the break, as you said. And it's very much a mystery, but they're in the game, so to speak. 98th game today that they've played already. And I heard a stat last night. I think baseball started last year yesterday. The first game for the Phillies was played yesterday, last year, this time. That's almost hard to believe that, you know, they played a 60-game season and we did get baseball in last year, but now we're up to game 98 already. So long season. In the Phillies press notes this afternoon, Bob Brookover, many of you might know him from the Philadelphia Inquirer, covered the Phillies for 34 years, beginning in 1988. And he is retiring after today's game and 34 years of coverage. He's now retired. So guess we could say former baseball writer Bob Brookover. Good luck to Bob.
Yeah, good luck to him. He did a nice job. He was very even-keeled. Kind of a baseball writer, old school kind of baseball writer, and I enjoyed his stuff. So best of luck to him. You know, the time comes for all of us at some point where we say, hey, you know, it's time to move along. You know, so hopefully he got a nice package, retirement package from them, and he'll pop up from time to time. So I'm sure we'll be seeing or hearing from Bob, just not on a regular basis.
Yep. Bryce Harper stole two bases in the past week in the same game. He became the first Philly to steal second, third, and home, three bases in a game. Jason Wirth, last time around May 12th, 2009, did that as well, I believe. Here I'm reading out of the Phillies press notes. It says Harper became the first Philly to steal second, third, and home in a game. So that's pretty cool. And Wirth, I think, got two bags in a game. I can't quite follow the Phillies press notes on this. It said Jason Wirth, May 12th, 2009 versus the Los Angeles Dodgers. But then it doesn't say much about what he actually did. So
well, Bryce has some speed. You know, he's a hustler. You know, that's number one. I mean, Bryce is a gamer. You know, that's one thing he brings to this team. Hustles every day that he's healthy, certainly. He's stolen 20 bases in the past. He's got some stolen base instincts. He's stolen as many as 15 bases with the Phillies just a couple of years ago in his first full season here in Philadelphia. He's already up to 12 this year. So he's on a pace that he can approach. He can take a run at that 20 steal mark for the second time in his career. So, you know, Bryce has that aspect to his game. If he wants that to be a part of his game, he stole 18 bases as a rookie. So he's never going to lead the league in steals. That's not what he's primarily here for, but he's a hustler and he's got some speed. So if you give him the opportunity, he's going to take it.
Yeah. Here I did decipher these Phillies notes here. It says Jason Wirth did it May 12th, 2009. That's three bases in one game. Pete Rose, May 11th, 1980 at Cincinnati, and Larry Boa stole three bags on August 28th, 1970 versus Atlanta. So joins an exclusive club there. Not many people to do that for the Phillies.
I think if you look back, that may be the case. For some reason, I'm remembering it with Worth as well, but I definitely remember with Pete Rose. Pete Rose in that game against his old Cincinnati team stole second, third, and home, I believe, in the same sequence. So I think that Worth might have accomplished that too, stealing second, third, and home in the same sequence. So
it said May 12th, 2009 versus Los Angeles Dodgers. So it's pretty cool. As far back as 1960, as far back as Elias can confirm for the Phillies. So yeah, that's some nice company to be in.
Bryce is having a nice year. He battled probably for the first, at least for the first third of the season. He was battling one injury after another, and he was in the lineup a lot of the times. He was in and out a couple of times, but he was, even when he was in the lineup a couple of times during the first half of the season, he was battling injuries. But still, through that, through what was a challenging physical first half, we're sitting here, early in the second half of the season. He's got 15 homers. He's got a dozen steals. He's hitting .287 with a .390 on base percentage, slugging .520. His OPS is .910. So Bryce is having a Bryce Harper year. There is absolutely nothing wrong with Bryce Harper's season so far, other than that his RBIs are down. And his RBIs are down a little bit because of opportunity. You know, he was coming up without guys on base. And I think one part of his game where he was struggling during the first half was producing with runners in scoring position. He was getting hits at times when there wasn't anybody in scoring position. He was hitting home runs, as was a big deal was made out of it. I think his first maybe 10 or 11 homers were solo shots. So, his RBI opportunities during that first half, that's one part of his game that was definitely down. And maybe, you know, if he had been typical Bryce, you know, in those opportunities during the first half, the Phillies might have won a half dozen more games. And, you know, right now we'd be looking at, being a little bit closer to first place. But that said, overall, he's having a pretty good year. He's gotten it back together pretty good over the last few weeks. And Bryce Harper certainly, you know, not only is Bryce Harper the least of the Phillies' problems, he's not at all a problem for the Phillies. You want to look at problems, we got to look elsewhere. Center field's a big problem right now, Rich. Travis Jankowski was put on the COVID IL today. COVID being, you know, another big thing that popped up with the Phillies a week ago. And, you know, is that coincidental, you know, that this past week's slide, if you will, happened when all that COVID, you know, nonsense broke with Nola and Bohm and, you know, guys like that. Now we have another guy today, Jankowski, going out. The Phillies have been playing games with this center field position all year. Looked like Odubel Herrera was going to have some miraculous, you know, reincarnation and suddenly start playing really well again. He did for a stretch, but overall his numbers haven't been great. Jankowski played center field a little bit well defensively. Himself, Luke Williams. I mean, they've had moments. You know, but nothing, you know, Roman Quinn's been out hurt again. Adam Haseley's missed almost the whole season almost. So center field right now, as far as I'm concerned, is a black hole for the Phillies. That is a place where they need to find for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years. They need to find their Gary Maddox. They need to find their Shane Victorino. They don't have that right now. And that's a big problem right now for the Phillies, that up the middle center field, somebody who can produce offensively, but also play, if not a gold glove caliber defense, at least an above average Major League Baseball caliber defense. So center field's a big problem right now for this team, and a couple of holes in the back end of the pitching rotation and the closer spot. I mean, those are big spots right now. That's what this team needs if they want to go on an extended run, plus staying healthy, keep everybody else healthy.
Yeah, as you said, staying healthy, that's the key. And in the beginning of the week, I heard on WIP, the local talk sports radio here in town, that the Phillies actually have one of the lowest team vaccination rates of all MLB teams. They're at about 50%. So that was unbeknownst to me. I didn't know what the Phillies situation was with the COVID vaccinations amongst the players. So there you go. You got 50% of the players as of the start of this week that are not vaccinated for one reason or another. They don't want to take the vaccination. So, you know, that COVID has creeped back onto this Phillies team. It's creeped onto a couple of other teams like the Yankees. I think there was a postponement because of the Yankees one for one game. But yeah, the Phillies are battling that as well. So be interesting to know why the Phillies probably wouldn't want to be vaccinated. But for now, we do know that they're one of the lowest vaccinated teams in the league.
You know, I don't know what to say, Rich. You know, you open up a can of worms when you start talking about it because it's so passionate on, you know, this issue of vaccination. To me, it's a no-brainer. You know, get out there, get yourself vaccinated. My wife and I have been fully vaccinated for 2.5. We're going on 3 months, you know, being in about a week. We're about a week shy of being fully vaccinated for 3 months now. With this new variant that they're talking about, I mean, I do a lot of reading on it too. And it's been not all, but it's been the overwhelming majority, the vast majority, like insanely huge vast majority of the people who have been hospitalized, gotten seriously ill and died of COVID in recent weeks when it's upticked have been people who weren't vaccinated. It's really that simple. Why aren't the Phillies getting vaccinated? I don't know. To me, it would be a question of leadership in the locker room. Of course, it's an individual decision. But I think if your leaders are getting it done and are being vocal about what they think should be done, maybe that puts a little peer pressure on the rest of the people. I did note that after that little outbreak earlier in the week, that Rhys Hoskins came out saying that he was going to be vaccinated and hadn't been at that point. He's going to get vaccinated. So Hoskins has a leadership role in this team. So hopefully that'll spur, you know, a couple extra guys and they'll start, you know, maybe the whole idea of seeing an Alec Bohm have to miss a few games, an Aaron Nola have to miss a few games, now a Travis Jankowski have to miss a few games. You know, maybe some of these guys will start saying to themselves, this just isn't worth it. You know, if I end up having to be put on the shelf for 5 days or 10 days, even if I'm not sick, I'm not helping the team, you know, when I have to go away from the team. So, you know, hopefully that'll change and those numbers will go up. It's about all you can say at this point, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of Rhys Hoskins, this past week as well, on Tuesday night, he became just the 7th player in MLB history and the first Philly with 300 runs scored, 300 walks and 300 RBIs in 500 career games or fewer. So Hoskins joined an elite club of guys named Aaron Judge, Frank Thomas, Eddie Matthews, Ralph Kiner, Charlie Keller, and Ted Williams. Of note, of course, RBIs didn't become an official statistic till 1920. So Rhys Hoskins joined a pretty exclusive list there, 7th player in MLB history with those stats.
And Rhys is having himself a nice season. I mean, he leads the ball club with 21 homers, 59 RBIs, 55 runs scored are leading the team. His 82 hits are second on the team, only to Segura. He's getting on base at an unacceptable clip to me, 321. The 231 batting average is 20 points lower than I would like to be seeing Rhys Hoskins hit. I'd like to be seeing a little more consistency from him. But that doesn't concern me so much with a 238 career batting average. It's about on par with his career batting average. But that 321 on base percentage bothers me a little bit for a guy whose on base percentage career wise is about 30 or 40 points higher than that. And he had a 384 on base percentage last year. That ability to get on base was always a big part of Hoskins' game. The ability to draw walks. I want him hitting, maybe, you know, his 21 homers are a product of, you know, him swinging a little bit more than taking walks. But Hoskins, you know, I hate to see him get to the point where we're saying he is what he is, but that may be the case. He's 28 years old already. It's not like he's a young developing player. He's 28. Yeah. Usually by 28, when you've been playing for, you know, maybe 3-4 full years in the big leagues, you've pretty much established a baseline of what you are. And if what Rhys Hoskins is a 35 homer, you know, close to 100 RBI guy, that's fine, all well and good. But you'd like to see that come with a, you know, closer to a 250 batting average and maybe closer to a 380 on base percentage. If you can get that, then you got a passable first baseman. You have to start at some point wondering, would Rhys Hoskins be a viable trade chip, you know, to somebody? Do you have somebody else you can plug in there? You know, do you maybe give first base to Alec Bohm and try to bring in a better defensive and all around offensive producing third baseman at some point and give Bohm a chance to see if he can develop his offensive game without the pressure of playing defense at third base? Because Bohm has certainly shown his pedigree in the minor leagues and in the, in college, is that he can hit. Never going to be a big slugger, I don't think, but he can certainly be a productive hitter. So, you know, I think Rhys Hoskins, he may at some point become a trade chip.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I'd rather have him on the Phillies, of course, but here's another little tidbit on Hoskins. He has played 500 career games since making his MLB debut on August 10th, 2017. Hoskins has hit 112 home runs and has had 313 walks since his debut. So the only other player in MLB history with as many home runs and walks since Hoskins' debut date, which was August 10th of 17, is Los Angeles Angels' Mike Trout. He had 119 home runs with an incredible 333 walks. So that's pretty good company too there that Hoskins is in. And as you said, if he could just tweak his game just a little bit more, we'd be talking about him in a much different light. So right now, Rich, still with the Phillies.
Never again. Mentioned Rhys Hoskins.
Your mic sort of went out.
Can you hear me?
Your mic went out a little bit. I can hear you, but it's not as good as it was just a minute ago.
Oh, there you go. I'm sorry about that. I flipped it up. Never again am I going to allow you to mention Rhys Hoskins in the same breath as Mike Trout.
Okay. You know,
Trout with his all-around game, you know, he's one of the best hitters, one of the best players in baseball. Obviously, you know, the defense, the ability to play center field, the speed. He's so much more dynamic a player than Rhys Hoskins. But, I appreciate the idea of, you know, Rhys does have that ability to put together the power with the ability to get on base. You know, he does have those two things going for him. But I think that just only plays to what I was saying earlier about he hasn't been getting on base this year as much as he was. Yeah. So if he loses that, you know, and he loses that part of his game, then really all you're left with is the power. And it seems like all we've really gotten from Rhys this year so far is occasional power. Yeah. And mostly that comes in spurts. You know, you get your power hitters who, you know, swing for the fences. They tend to hit their homers in bunches. So you'll get 5-6 homers over a, you know, a 10-day period or a 2-week period. Then you might not get anything for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. Then you'll get, you know, 1 or 2 here and there. And it all adds up for them when they have 2 or 3 hot stretches. But outside of that, you know, then you got to play another, you know, 20 some weeks during the season where they're a hole in your lineup when they're not doing anything other than hitting homers. So Hoskins is certainly not a great defensive player, or he may not even be an average defensive player over first base. So you know, you're, what are you getting out of the guy other than that occasional power, you know? And that's going to be a tough decision at some point for the team's going to have to make, you know, when they decide, is Reese Hoskins the kind of guy we can win with? Can we win a title with a Reese Hoskins at first base?
I'm going to go out on a limb, and it's going to be a very short limb. I'll probably crack walking out onto saying this, but I'd almost rather see them trade Bryce Harper than Reese Hoskins. I might need my head examined, but I prefer grittiness to Harper's perceived carrying a team. What's
you getting my phone here? Looking in my phone to see if I got a number of a good doctor here for you, Rich. Hold on a second.
And I was the opposite a couple of weeks ago, but I don't know. For some reason, I see the production out of Reese Hoskins this year with the 59 ribbies. Who else is close? Let's see. Andrew McCutchen, as of, you know, before the start of today's game, 52. And look at Mr. Bryce Harper. He's got 35 ribbies. He is the solo specialist, I have to say, for these people that are telling, you know, he's got 11 home runs with no one on base. Come on, Harper, drive some people in sometimes. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'll add to that Reese Hoskins has 405 plate appearances. He stepped to the plate 405 times. That's more than anybody else on the team as well. That's 80 some more plate appearances than Harper has. That's over 100 more than Gene Segura. It's 70 more than Alec Bohm. It's 30 more than even Andrew McCutchen has. So he's had many more opportunities than these guys have had. Hoskins, basically, he stayed healthy and he's been out there all year. So I think that a big part of the reason, I'm hey, Rich, you know, love doing this podcast with you, but I'm not going to say that you need your head examined or you're crazy, but if you want to say that Reese Hoskins is a player that you want to have around more than Bryce Harper, I think that's barking up the wrong tree anyway, but that's just my opinion. Sure. I could be wrong, you know, so
I'm just saying on a dollar per player basis, save this money, the rest of that Harper contract. And I like Bryce Harper, but I'd rather see them get a star pitcher and a star reliever, jettison that salary. I know it's crazy talk, but he's going to be an anchor.
Who plays right field?
Well, we'll have to deal with that.
Oh, then we got to go. We have to come to it if we jettison his contract.
We got Mickey Morandini Mickey Moniak coming up.
Oh, yeah. Hot. Sure.
So we're going to see what he does.
Rich, people are turning off this podcast now. Quickly, they're turning it off.
Keep it on. They got to
turn it off as you speak. The more you mention Mickey Moniak replacing Bryce Harper, switches are going off left and right.
I don't want to put all my eggs in the Harper basket. And I'm sure there's fans out there that would agree. He does not carry this team. He's a great player individually, but he's almost like the player that was on the Nationals. And since he left the Nationals, what did they do? They won a world championship. Was Harper the problem? I don't know. I like Bryce Harper, and don't get me wrong, but I don't know. At this point, just personally, I'd rather see that salary jettisoned, bring in three or four guys that'll earn a fantastic salary for a shorter amount of time, and don't use that anchor to hold the Phillies down for the next 10 years with a guy that's really not carrying this team. I mean, I could see if he had 30 home runs and 70 ribbies, and he was, you know, he does hustle. He does play the game right, and he's a great player. But in my estimation, no, I'd rather see three very good players in place of him. But that's just me.
You lost me, Rich. You just lost me there.
All right. You don't have to agree.
Harper is one problem that they don't need to worry about now. Now, to me, it's move on to the next problem. And money isn't the issue at all. Harper is not keeping them from doing other things. Now, have they spent their money wisely on guys like Didi Gregorius? Have they spent their money wisely on guys like Andrew McCutchen? Have they spent their money wisely on, you know, some of the other moves that they've made in the bullpen? I'm not sure, but Bryce Harper is not the issue. Bryce Harper is part of the solution on this team. Harper, Realmuto, Segura, you know, these are guys that you can win with. Wheeler on the mound, Nola on the mound. They have a couple of relievers who I think would be fine here as far as on a contending team. Archie Bradley, young Connor Brogdon. I'm still bullish on Jose Alvarado. He's having a down year. He's walked too many guys, but you know, I think they have pieces on here that they can win with. And they have a couple of kids who are coming who I still believe in. I still believe in Boehm. I still believe in Spencer Howard. So it's just a question of if you want to win on the short term, meaning this year, and I don't know that we're talking about winning a World Series, but if you want to make the playoffs, maybe win the division, be a team that's tough in October, rather than a sweep and you're out of the playoffs in October. If that's what you want, then I don't know what the moves are, how you're going to do it. If you're Dave Dombrowski, though, and I'm sure these are the conversations that they're having in their back room. They have to find two more answers in their starting rotation. They have to find a closer. They have to find an everyday center fielder. They have to find those four pieces. If they don't find those four pieces in the next week, then I think it's going to be very difficult for them to run down the Mets and win this division and get into the playoffs. Can they keep the basic core together? Maybe add one or two pieces at this trade deadline that they can keep into the future. They've been talking about a guy like Chris Bryant, getting him in here. He's buddies with Harper, and you know, maybe getting him to sign longer term. If you can do things like that, fine. But in the offseason, then you must find those other pieces. So I don't think they're far away, but the pieces that they are missing, they can't keep doing what they've been doing the last couple of years, which is to say, we're hoping. Vince Velasquez, they're hoping Matt Moore, they're hoping, you know, for, you know, one of these center fielders, a first rounder in Hazley or Roman Quinn to stay healthier. Just they've been rolling the dice, hoping for the best with these things. And it's time to stop hoping for the best in situations where people have consistently let you down. And it's time to find answers with people who are proven, bring them in, and that'll help, I think, push you over the top. But I don't think the answer is to take away the best players that you already have. You have to keep your best players and add to them. So that's where I would be coming from. I would be looking to jettison, you know, my pieces to, you know, there are teams out there, you know, talking about Pittsburgh, maybe moving a guy like Tyler Anderson. Now, Tyler Anderson is not Max Scherzer. You know, and I'm sure that there are Philly fans out there who would be saying, you know, oh, I thought they were going to make a big move, you know, to something that was going to make a difference. Well, you know, bringing in a guy who, you know, gives up fewer hits than innings pitched, and he's got a 4-1 strikeout to walk ratio, 3.5-1 strikeout to walk ratio, is better at the back end as your fifth starter or your fourth starter than what you have right now. It doesn't have to be an ace. It can be one ace level guy. And then another guy can be a guy who you can run out there every fourth and fifth day to so that you have someone who you can rely on to give you a quality start, at least, you know, or five strong innings, six strong innings, most of their starts. They're not getting that right now out of their fourth and fifth starter. So, I think that the answers are out there. Just can Dombrowski pull them off? Are the Phillies willing to pull them off? And then, we'll see. But trading Bryce Harper, you're making me go, my head's about to explode.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Let's talk a little bit about Zach Wheeler to bring the curtain down on this week's show. Is he a legitimate contender for the Cy Young at this point?
Has to be considered that.
The floor for a minute plus. Go ahead.
Has to be considered. So, Rich, I mean, you're talking about not just, on this inconsistent team that he's won 8 games. His ERA, 2.37. He's gone out there every day, every turn in his rotation. He's made 20 starts. His strikeout to walk ratio, 160 strikeouts over 132.2 innings. He's 160 to 30 strikeout to walk ratio of more than 5 strikeout to walk ratio, almost 11 strikeouts per 9 innings. His whip is, at the very bottom of the ones, 2.30 FIP. I mean, he's doing everything that you need to do to win a Cy Young. I think that the only starting pitcher that I would have rated ahead of him would have been Jacob DeGrom. Now, DeGrom still has to be, I think, considered the front runner for the Cy Young Award, but DeGrom's hurt now. How much time is DeGrom going to miss? So I think that a big factor with Wheeler is going to be, not only does he, he has to continue to do what he's doing, but it would help too if DeGrom, turns out that his shoulder woes and whatever else is barking on his arm keeps him out for an extended period of time. DeGrom's not going to win the Cy Young if his season ends right now. He's not going to win the Cy Young if he continues to struggle with injuries and only makes a handful more starts the rest of the year. So it's a combination between Wheeler continuing the excellent season he's had so far, and if DeGrom's season gets derailed here by injuries, that leaves the door open for Zach Wheeler.
And of course, the last Cy Young winner for the Phillies was none other than the late, great Roy Halladay, who did so in 2010, had that Cy Young season for the Phillies. Right now, Wheeler is tied with DeGrom in leaders of WAR, wins above replacement player, 4.9. So they're neck and neck on that. And as you said, it might be coming down to a question of staying healthy for the rest of the season. And there's still, as you noted, a long way to go. There's a good 2+ months ahead of us, 2 months.
Yeah, and there are other guys having good seasons. You look at guys like Brandon Woodruff in Milwaukee and Wade Miley in Cincinnati, of course, DeGrom, and you've got Kevin Gausman is having a great year out there in San Francisco. And, there are Walker Buehler, with the Dodgers, Corbin Burns in Milwaukee. So there are a number of National League pitchers who, if DeGrom, does leave the door open, they can kick that door in and win the National League Cy Young Award this year. And like I said, we mentioned this earlier about the Phillies, chances. There's still 2 full months, to go, Rich. So, any one of these guys would need to, continue the great season they're having so far and maybe step it up a little bit. Somebody, I think, in this group, and it could be Wheeler, because to me, we get to see him, of course. We get the pleasure of seeing him once or twice every week. But somebody in this group is going to have a strong kick at the finish, I think, and it's going to put the pressure on DeGrom no matter what. So I think if DeGrom, does stay struggling with physical concerns, then a guy like Wheeler, certainly Zach Wheeler's got as good a chance as anybody in the National League to win the Cy Young Award.
Yeah, and with today's win, the Phillies won 2-1 on Sunday here on the 25th of July. It was manager Joe Girardi's 1,065th win As a manager, he tied Frank Robinson for 56th place on the all-time managerial wins list today. So congratulations to Joe Girardi for doing that. And I wanted to remind our listeners that go over to the fightinphillies.com blog. That's where you can find the home for the Phillies Talk podcast. You can write me a email to podcast@phillystalk.com. If you have any comments or something you want to see talked about on the show, give us an email on that. And you can also drop by our new voicemail hotline. You can send a voicemail in to 609-365-0002 to the Phillies Talk Podcast voicemail hotline. Tell us what you're thinking about. And if you want, I can add it to a show. So plenty of ways to contact us here at fightingphillies.com. And how about yourself, Matt? Where can people find you on the web?
The two best places to always catch me, you catch me on Twitter at Phillies Bell. That's like the big bell that rings out there in center field whenever they win a game or somebody hits a home run. So at Phillies Bell on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram with that same handle, but it's mostly, so it would be nice to follow, I guess, on Instagram if fans would like, but it's mostly Phillies history notations that I put on the Instagram account. On the Twitter account, pretty much all kinds of stuff regarding the Phillies history. I share all the best articles from around the web that are Phillies related. A lot of my own quips and news and comments and predictions as far as the Phillies go, some game commentary. So at Phillies Bell on Twitter is the best place to follow me. And then the website is mattvesey.com. That's MattVesey.com, MattVesey.com. I'm doing baseball stuff right now. I've only been doing maybe an article every couple of weeks, so it's not like you're going to get bombed in your inbox. And I got a couple things coming up on the next day or two. I'm going to have a feature that I did for the Internet Baseball Writers Association of America on Dennis Eckersley. I do a piece for their newsletter every month, and I've started to focus on players that I grew up watching in the 70s and 80s. So I'm picking each month, I'm picking a star from the 70s and 80s and doing a piece on their career. I did Nolan Ryan in May. In June, I did Paul Molitor. And here in July, I did Dennis Eckersley. So next month, you'll see a new player pop up. And I believe that I'm starting to key around Gary Carter. It's going to be my August piece. I also will have coming up about a week from now, my latest MLB power rankings will be coming out at the website. So those are some things to look out for. And I've been kind of like stringing it along there, Rich, with that, just to see what happened here in this Mets game, which just went final. The Mets did win 5-4. Blue Jays challenged in the ninth inning, but the Mets held on for a 5-4 victory. So the Phillies gained no ground, but they didn't lose any. So they're still five games back, tied with the Braves for second place in the National League East. That's five out in the loss column, which is what matters.
Very cool. Yeah, it doesn't seem like the Phillies can capitalize with the Mets. When the Mets lose, the Phillies lose, and they just can't gain much ground that way. But basic point is the Phillies have to keep winning. They have to get that win streak that we're looking for still going on. They're 49-49 with the win today, 3.5 games back. And the Mets just keep on finding a way to win. They're, 5, 6, 7 games up over 500 right now. So Mets are finding ways to win. The Phillies need to do the same thing. They'll be playing Washington coming up this week. Who's your player to watch? One player to watch for this next series with Washington.
And the player for me to watch in the Washington series is a guy that we've talked about, is Alec Bohm. Bohm is back now from the COVID list. I think you know what you're going to get out of some of these Phillies guys. You know what you're going to get out of Harper and Hoskins and Gregorius and McCutcheon. You know, when these guys are in there, you know what you're going to get out of them. But Boehm is an everyday player. He's an everyday starter at third base. He's the team's top pick from a couple of years ago. They're giving him every opportunity, and it's time for this kid to step up and start really producing on a regular basis. So you're at home. It's a hitter's environment. It's summertime. What did Charlie Emanuel used to say? It's hitting season. So, you know, it's hot weather. You're down at Citizens Bank Park. It's time to produce. You know, the team needs it. You're back, you know, off of a little IL stint. So I think it's time now. Alec Boehm is the guy to watch for me. And then the second guy to watch, he's not on the field. He's sitting somewhere and he's watching what's going on. And he's on the phone. And that's Dave Dombrowski. He's going to have a big week, too, with the trade deadline coming up.
Okay, very good. I'm going to watch Mickey Moniak, who I called Mickey Morandini earlier, but I think the Phillies are going to put him in a few games this week and see what they can get out of him, or have him be trade bait for another team. Maybe they're going to play him a few games, see if he can do well, and he can only benefit himself to do well regardless. So that's the player I'm going to watch this week if he gets in there. Mickey Moniak, Philly's first pick overall in the draft a few years ago, and hopefully he'll do well. So we thank you for joining us on this edition of Phillies Talk, which is the longest running independent show just based on the Phillies. And Matt, you have a great week. Can't wait for the next one.
Thanks, you too, Rich, and go Phils.
World champion. Thank you.